Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about solar panels. Now, I'm just going to talk a bit about the technology development here. As a scientist, you keep on top of how this is going, because at various points in time, you have your friends go off to different types of things in the energy industry. I suppose most early on, I had people who, I knew people who were working on concentrators, various people working on silicon cells, started getting into research, and then the economics of it, different companies doing quality control on solar cells. And so it was always a topic for conversation going ahead. So what I'm going to cover here, this is a welcome break from yet another talk on coronavirus, but in a sense it's sort of like development happening in spite of the government. So just in the case for people will know that Australia's doing not well, but you know, things are under control, and miraculously things seem to be working in Australia which haven't worked elsewhere. And I think the main thing is that we're doing things in, well, with the government, in cooperation with the government, but in spite of the government. So whereas whatever it is people have in other countries have to a certain extent let the running of the place be left to the government. Not to say that Australia runs things anything differently, but we've been through, in this case, and it's going to link to solar cells, we've been through this case, what was it, drought, then bushfires, then coronavirus, and so essentially the funding mechanisms and the political systems had been in place already. So quite literally people have walked out of the bushfire control centre and just pulled down the word bushfire and put up pandemic control centre. And people had various directives who were running out of drinking water, so directives, not a lockdown, but you know, it was so by little bits your democratic hard-won freedom to water your pour water on your pavement or pour water on your cars stopped. We had various water restrictions and the like. And then we've had sort of a series of fire seasons, and we had a really pathetic poor turnout fire system where a lot of Australians got roasted in place, and the people had all the political arguments, and then the scientists came in and said, oh look, the heat load there leaves such and such temperature, so even if you had, you know, complete water system and you just poured it on yourself, it would evaporate all the water on yourself, therefore these are the public measures you can go. And so we introduced a new level of emergency called catastrophic, and that was catastrophic was that drop what you're doing, get in your car and piss off. And so it was very much, and then the idea of an evacuation order being issued, and you had to follow it because they weren't so concerned about you getting away just in time. They wanted you to get away in a sequence manner, not to leave the roads all jammed. So they had a learning sequence. So there's been a series of things. Although there's been mistakes, the sort of the general understanding is not to have a to have analysis afterwards, so you have the mistakes and say, yep, it's noted as a mistake, and we'll go through. Now, what's sort of happened is that this sort of professional crisis management sort of developed in the background, and politicians have been wanting to get up, and they've learnt that they want to look good, So, yeah, they are running things and they're going through a copy book, but they're very much wanting to look good. And there's, you know, one of the basic things is switching off politics during a class division, during emergencies. So, to a certain extent, yes, our politician is looking good and saying the right thing, but he's sort of, that they've learnt to do the right thing. But overall, I think the time for letting politicians run things are probably over. I think they're getting a bit of a boost of people who know no better going to them, but in the analysis they'll say, oh, well, you know, you'll be in the bad class of things. What I was going to say is that essentially you can have a fraction of the population doing the right thing, and there's another person saying, who'll say, I'm not infected, I'm allowed to do what I want to do, and basically running their own universe or society, and they can run and cut across you and force their way forward. And this is to a certain extent what politicians are doing. So look, I predict that there'll be a bit of a turn back. Now, the solar industry, what basically happened is in the time before solar was more competitive. So in Australia is the greatest, what is it, infrastructure, political stability, insulation. So insulation doesn't mean insulation, it's insolation. It's got the greatest region of cloudless, high-intensity sun forever. So if you've got a solar cell and the efficiency increases and the lifetimes increases, it sort of becomes cost-effective, you know, in different locations in Europe and America, but it becomes outrageously successful for putting in Australia. So what had happened is that the politicians, sort of similar thing, tried to dress themselves up such that they were always saying the right thing. So this is how annoying. I don't know if you've ever had students a bit like this who do the wrong thing, but they insist they've always done the right thing. So that they were very much beholden to spike and destroy the solar industry and support coal instead, because Australia has a massive quantity of coal. It's an eye-watering 600 years. We could single-handedly. So what Saudi Arabia has in oil, we've got in coal and uranium. So I think something like 97% of the world's high value uranium is here, simply because we haven't done much as a continent. Sort of the Indian subcontinent's gone up and slammed in and created the Himalayas, and America's been doing things, volcanism, where Australia has just, all we've done is we've broken off Gondwana and drifted north, flooded up, and then eroded. And as we've eroded down, the minerals have deposited here. So that being said, there's this flashpoint where people, I think per capita, we're now in the top 10 solar countries on the earth, and per capita we're just behind Germany. Things are changing simply because there's, like, a bit unlike Germany, you've got, you know, you can imagine these classic, how Europe's all crinkly and there's history everywhere, whereas Australia, there's these huge, which, when I say mind-bogglingly big expanse spaces, it's just gone bananas. So I've got solar cells, everyone's like I say, not everyone's got solar cells in their houses. There's a bit of a kickback. So there's a fraction of people who believe solar cells cause fire. There are a couple of people who... I don't know if Christianity is not necessarily anti-solar cells. So a lot of churches have solar cell crucifixes on them. There you go. There are three churches I've seen. There you go. A lot to three. But then there's various people. There's sort of, dare I say, look, there's corrupt people, criminals. There's essentially criminals doing housing developments in Australia. So they buy up land, make a huge amount of profit, and put the houses really close together, all the same, and not a solar cell in this whole new suburb. But that's because they hate it. It's part of the thing to do it. So this is a personal stuff. But against that, that can only last for so long before it's actually cheaper to have solar cells. I think there's this thing of these farms, and so essentially there's another aspect is that it's not just good old Aussie know-hows. There's sort of international companies bid, so there's Spanish and Japanese and Chinese companies bid to build entire solar farms here. And so it's not just, you know, good old Aussies working things out. And so they will arrive, and off the container ships will be containers, and then out of the containers will be trucked to the location, and then it'll be just pulled out of the containers, huge amounts. Now, these are your bulk standard, ultra-cheap solar cells. And they're so cheap now that it's not worth maintaining them. So there's this whole scrapping system. Now, the change of solar... I think I bought 250-watt solar panels and a converter and all that type of stuff on two aspects of my house. And it's got heaps of trees around my house, so it's sort of a bit iffy. But what's happening now is that... The solar cells are getting up to 330 watts. So 250 to 330, that's quite a lot of increased efficiency per area. But there's sort of no qualms with the area. You can sort of just, like, the land's so cheap. Cheap here. So, and then the panels themselves have a little... computer control inverter, so they can be shaded or have a big piece of bird shit on it. So the overall development is going forward, and I think in 2007 to 2011 the capacity increased tenfold, and then four years fourfold and stuff like that. So it's just massively increasing. Now there's a problem that the investors build these big stations, and they have to be basically conditioned to go into the network. So the network is built for coal power stations, and these stations don't have. I think it's something to do with phase inductive load. They've got to be shifted. Still haven't got storage across here. So that's how it relates to coronavirus is that the Australian response, politicians would love to let you think that they do it. Or you'd love to think it's the good old Aussie attitude. But it's something, you know, the smile and shrimp and the Barbie, and you know the some sort of correlation between sporting prowess and I don't know what it is, some and in essence that sort of idle self-reliant, and it's been more a response to sort of pragmatic situation after scenario after scenario. And so the Australian solar cell stuff is been more a sort of mistakes and people sabotaging it, and they've sort of been sabotaging, I don't know, like they've been going into one section and sabotaging it. But there's it's grown at such a rate that it's going ahead with it regardless, and then so the policies are actually being extremely pro coal, and it's been a bit of a nightmare sort of the non scientific method, but it's sort of been going ahead. Anyway, now there's a major thing that high voltage DC transmission lines can go global distances. Now, the reason is that it's I squared R is a power loss in your transmission line. So if you've got some copper line going from point A to point B, it's got a resistance. If you can drop the current through it, there's less power. So if you increase the current by a factor of 10, the power loss increases by a factor of 100. However, if you can reduce the current by a factor of 10, power loss is reduced by a factor of 100. So, and the power is I times voltage. So the power transmitted is by voltage. So if you go up to millions of volts, and to get up to millions of volts, you need a series of DC components. Now, the thing is that millions of volts, it will spark through occasionally, but it's just whether it can self-heal. And by the time you build it such that it can take various things, strains and earthquakes and rollouts and stuff like that, the actual going from, say, 100,000 volts to 10 million volts is not this huge quantum increase. It's not a factor of 100 times more expensive, maybe a factor of 10 times more expensive. But the end result is that these cables already connect North Island, New Zealand to South Island, New Zealand. They connect Tasmania to the rest of Australia, that little island underneath, and they connect Britain and France and Italy and North Africa. And essentially people are saying, well, one day we'll connect ourselves to Iceland, whatever that means. You can imagine eventually Europe and the US constructed. And I think if the US was sensible, that'd be looking at that type of thing. That's high voltage DC. So the idea in Australia is that we have looking at Singapore and Northern Australia, and that we buy basically lease the land to, the simplest way is lease land to Singapore and let them build the station and run the whole lot and eventually sell something back to us. Because the bottom line is that these industries, they don't last forever. Say your nuclear industry might last, look, if you had a 7-year-old power station, you'd be just pretty mad to go with it. So that's the background. One of the things I want to finish off talking about solar cells. So there's that aspect of it, in terms of that people look on brochures, and probably the biggest mistake you can do is listen to a politician, and it's sort of in spite of what politicians would do, they sort of, it's working, and then they sort of stand next to the, they get themselves photographed with success. So their success chases in both cases. So And you ask, and if you ask them to interact and do their political interaction, it's very rare that they actually are good in terms of, it's very rare that a politician will behave in such a way which is optimal, because more often optimization requires incredibly complex understanding of technology developments and life cycles, and there's often in general, it's for something to be really efficient and good, it generally starts off to disadvantage a whole heap of people and advantage a small group of people, and that of course is not how political works in terms of how it's been seen. So especially in democracies, you're really relying on sort of an ignorant emotional reaction at every point going forward, and if people can connect it, sort of like this writing this huge turbulent wave, and the sort of price of running that wave is that it's to get the technical aspects right. It's almost too much to get through. Now, there is a storm coming in Australia at the moment, so the one advantage of the hot ocean temperatures is that we've got these huge cloud bands going right across the continent. So all our rain, we're on sort of a huge distance. All the rain from New South Wales comes from the Indian Ocean and Bay of Bengal. It sort of swoops down. I don't know how it gets past the equator. And the art of it is that it will just pass over Australia and miss us and rain on the Pacific Ocean. There you go. Which is not much use to us. And so we had to have these other cold fronts come up from Antarctica and just basically squeeze the cloud out of to rain down on us. And so we've just been through this enormous rain event, and seeing it all happen here, it's interesting that after as it gets dusty, the solar efficiency drops, and when it rains, it increases. Okay, well, thanks a lot for listening. I'll just continue. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.